Welcome, everyone, to Creating a Family, talk about infertility and adoption. Today, we're going to be talking about whether you should become a mother or a parent in your 40s, in your 40, 45, whatever. What are the options for becoming a mom at that point, and what are the realities of older motherhood? An important topic. I think you're going to enjoy it. This show is brought to you by Creating a Family. We are the National Infertility and Adoption Education and Support Nonprofit. I'm Dawn Davenport. I'm your host and the director. You can find us and all of our resources online at creatingafamily.org. The Creating a Family radio show is underwritten by our corporate sponsor, Ferring Pharmaceutical. For women who have been undergoing fertility treatment and are still struggling to conceive, there are so many things that happen every day and so many interactions that happen every day that honestly weigh on our emotional health. There is, as they say, there's an app for that. Well, there is an app for that. This one is called Ferticom, and it's an app, obviously, for your phone. And it was developed by reproductive psychologists Dr. Ali Domar and Dr. Elizabeth Grill. And they designed this to help women address the many challenging situations that arise when you're struggling to conceive and are not at that point successful. They use cognitive, behavioral, and relaxation techniques, and they present more than 500 different coping options, and then they give you 50 specific situations that come up every day that you need to deal with. It's a great app, and it's available, and it's free, and it's called Ferticom, and you can find it at their website, FerticomApp.com. Let me spell that for you. F-E-R-T-I, that's Ferticom, C-A-L-M, app, A-P-P, FerticomApp.com. Excuse me. This show and all the resources provided by Creating a Family could not and honestly would not happen without the support of our partners. And our partners are agencies and organizations that believe in our mission of providing unbiased, accurate information along the entire continuum of those who are struggling to create a family. One of our wonderful goal sponsors is Adoptions from Shepherd Care. They are a nonprofit adoption agency founded in 1980, providing domestic infant adoption, international adoption from Colombia, and domestic and Hague-approved international home studies. Their mission is to provide competent and compassionate adoption services to expectant and birth parents, prospective adoptive parents, and most of all, children needing a forever family. Another one of our partners that believes in our mission is Schrapps 2.0. They are a specialty fertility pharmacy that believes pharmacy care can and should be remarkable. They have a lot of really innovative programs, including one that I absolutely love, which is the Open the Box program. So when your box of fertility meds come and every single person is overwhelmed at that point, they may say they're not, but they are, and they open the box, and they have a service where they're somebody from Schrapps 2.0 calls and literally walks you through the entire box. I absolutely love it. I think it is brilliant. For more information, you can go to our website on our partners page and find out about Schrapps 2.0. Today, we're going to be talking about should you become a mother at 40, at 45, what are the options for becoming a mother at that age, and what are the realities? And we're going to the experts. We're talking to moms who became a mom for the first time in their 40s. So a panel of women are going to be talking to us about how they made the decision, what options to become an older mom, what options they chose, because there's a number of different options you have. And here's the most important part. What is it really like? What is it? What is the reality of being a mom in your 40s, particularly in now? Because it's now that we see it. This is we see it more happening more often, which is why we are re-airing this show from a couple of years ago. And what sparked us to re-air it was noticing that people were searching for this topic more. There was a recent report that came out that birth rates were decreasing in all age ranges in the United States, except for women in their 40s. It seemed like this was the appropriate time to bring back this show. I hope you enjoy it. Welcome, Lisa, Molly, Kathy, and Julia, to Creating a Family.
Thank you, Dawn.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm looking forward to this show as well. I think in general, infertility patients tend to be older when they get pregnant. Obviously, they have usually been in treatment for a while and have struggled trying to conceive before even that. And the same could be said with adoptive parents. But we get a lot of questions from people, both on our online support community, as well as just throughout the social networks and emails, of people thinking about becoming a parent, but knowing that their age may be a factor, and worrying about the issues that may arise. So I'm really looking forward to talking with you guys, because you're of the been there, done that contingent. One of the questions that you've probably all received is, why did you wait until your 40s or 50s to become a mother? Julia, let me ask, start that with you. You waited until you were 50, or you may have conceived at 49, but anyway, you were 50 when your child was born. So why wait that long?
Well, I'm in a kind of unique situation. Well, less and less unique. I'm in a same-sex marriage. And first, I hadn't found the right partner yet. And second, in Tennessee, being a gay parent has in the past been grounds for losing your child. And I never felt really safe until I met my wife, Lisa, and we decided to move forward. Plus, egg donation when you're using a live donor is extraordinarily expensive and difficult, and the technology has improved substantially in the last few years, so now we have egg banks, just like we had sperm banks. Mm-hmm. So it was a much more feasible thing to do.
And more economical, right?
Yeah.
Kathy, what about you? You were 41 when you adopted, which in the world of adoption is not really considered much older, but then you adopted again two more children in the same year when you were 45. Why did you wait until 41 and 45 to start your family?
Well, mainly it's the history of my family, I think, more than anything else. And I did want to correct one thing. I'm actually not married. I'm a single mom, but I do have my mother living with me. So I'm not doing this by myself, but I'm not doing it with a partner.
Okay. Yeah, that's important, because I think that there are different issues, right?
They are. I am an only child and an only grandchild, and I was having not a whole lot of family. And I had been tinkering with adoption. I really wanted to do it, but I wasn't kind of getting there. And I guess when you turn 40, it's one of those milestone birthdays. It got me serious.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I think that happens to a lot of people. All of a sudden, a birthday with a zero on it does get our attention. Molly, what about you? You adopted through foster care. You were fortunate and had an infant, replaced an infant. Why did you wait to 45 to consider adoption?
We didn't really wait. We had been pursuing international adoption after we recognized that some fertility issues we were having, and the treatment for the fertility issues would have taken a lot of money and a lot of time and quite frankly, a lot of pain. So we opted for adoption, which had always been in my plan, but I was glad to bring my husband along at that point. We pursued several international adoptions and got really close several times just to have the door to the country be closed for governmental reasons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
you were right in
that
time
frame,
weren't you? Yeah.
We really were.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was very painful. So we moved back to our home state, and I said, you know, why don't we just try this foster adoption? We might not get a baby, but we have experience with teens, so let's just jump in with both feet. And about 2 weeks after our last class and all of our paperwork was through and we were approved, we received the call. And here she is.
Wow.
Yeah, we were very lucky, we know.
Yeah, well, and Lisa, how about you? You were 44 when you adopted,
mm-hmm.
I think it's your son, right? Yeah.
That's correct. Mm-hmm. Actually, it sounds like on the panel, I'm the one that had the most traditional route to later motherhood, and that I just, you know, I'm a late bloomer altogether. So I married late. I went back to graduate school late. And then we started, you know, after I finished the sort of the class portion of my graduate program, I felt more comfortable becoming pregnant, and because I wouldn't have to travel back and forth to class all the time. So we tried fertility treatments first. They are, as others have said, extremely expensive, time-consuming, and painful. And for us, they didn't work. So we tried a lot of different things. And that takes time. And so towards the end of that process, kind of started thinking a little bit more about adoption, hadn't really considered it up until the point where it looked like we weren't going to be able to have biological children, and then decided to kind of move forward with international adoption, and we chose Korea for a host of reasons. And that was a long wait as well. We were sort of caught in a changing timeline in that program. Somebody had alluded to earlier to countries closing, and that certainly happens. And Korea is in fact, adopting fewer and fewer children out of the country as time goes by. And so it took a little longer for us to actually our son's arrival took a lot longer than we anticipated, so we were in the process for quite a while.
Yeah, I think that's actually a story for a lot of people, especially with international adoption. Well, both, actually. Yeah, all types of adoption, really, that it takes longer than they had originally anticipated. So we often hear that one of the concerns that people have is their energy level and whether they feel that they have the energy to devote to young parenting, parenting young children, toddlers, infants, staying up at night, things such as that. And also, you know, with the any additional, if your child has special needs or your child is born premature, all of that is a further energy drain on the parents. Molly, you were 45 and with a newborn. Did you find, was energy something you worried about, and in reality, was it something that you were did your concerns come to fruition, or do you feel like energy really is not a concern?
I think it is a concern, and I was just going to have a little fun and tell you that I live on Red Bull, so I think it is a concern. It was a big concern of mine whether I'd have the energy and be able to be as the fun mom I wanted to be. I wanted to take some bike riding and swimming and running and play. And I think, to be honest, I haven't seen a drop-off. I have the good fortune of being a mom to a very hyperactive young girl. And it's not just me that says so. So she's not just hyperactive in comparison to myself, my old age self. But she's very, very active and very quick. So I have a runner on my hands. So far I've been able to keep up with her, at least mentally and physically. I think one thing it's done for me is remind me, after all those years in corporate America and living a too sedentary life, that I really do love to get out and play and exercise and have more fun. So it's reintroduced me to getting more physically fit. And for that, I thank her. But I'll catch her one day, I promise.
Yeah, maybe when she's sleeping till noon at 14. Yeah, that's when you'll...
Someday,
yeah.
Right. But
someday.
As far as, you know, do you get up for the babies, for the feedings? And I don't think it took any more toll on myself than it does the younger gals. I don't think it makes any difference to age, because we love our babies, we love our kiddos, and we'll get up and do everything that's necessary for them.
Julia, as a pregnant and then just having given birth mom at 50 with a newborn, how did you find the energy? How was your energy, and how is it compared to other moms of newborns and 18-month-old toddlers?
Well, I don't have a lot of other moms of little tiny ones in my life. I think that's one of the things that we really do sacrifice, because our peers don't have these little bitty ones. But on the energy question, I don't think I have less energy now than I had when I was 20-something. I think I just focus it better. When I was 20-something, it was, oh, I got to go to this concert, and I got this paper to write, and oh my goodness, I forgot to do blah, blah, blah. And now I know how to organize myself. I know how to use my energy appropriately. And I'm not having a problem with the energy.
And that says a lot, because you've got your it's a son, right? You have a son?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, your son is
Luke.
Is at the stage where he's moving a lot. Infants may keep you up at night and make you tired, but they tend to stay put, which is a little different. Yeah, Julia, I was glad that you raised the issue about being out of step with your peers, both your friends that you had before you had children, and also the parents of your children's friends. Kathy, have you experienced the fact that, or maybe ask, is your peer group, the peer group you had before, we're going to break this question up into both of those being out of step issues. One, your peer group before you had children, has that stayed the same now? Or were any of your friends also young moms when you became a mom, or have you had to create a new peer group?
I pretty much had to create a new peer group. I've retained all my friends. It's not that I haven't. It's just that, you know, I can't be called up on Sunday at 1 and say, can you go somewhere on Sunday at 2?
Mm-hmm.
No, I can't. So what I can do now in terms of social activities is very different. You would, you know, never have found me at soccer practice when my friends' kids were all at soccer practice. It was a foreign idea. But now I'm at soccer practice every week. Fortunately, at those events, the parents don't really care how old you are, and I've gotten some wonderful friends through those activities.
Yeah, our children do pull us into a whole new world, and there may be friendships of convenience, but that counts. Lisa, what's been your experience with? You were 44, and I assume mm-hmm. you had a contingent of friends at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Did any of them have younger children, and how has your becoming a parent at 44 affected your ongoing friendships, the ones that you had before?
So I sort of have two groups of friends, many of whom are my age, and then I actually was fortunate far before we got, we had children. When I started graduate school, most of my compatriots, all of my classmates, were about 10 years younger than I. So it's interesting because I have a group of friends who have teenagers or older at this point. Certainly I'm old enough to have children who have children of their own. And then I have a group of people who really were parenting, were co-parenting along with them. We have the same age children. A lot of family members also have similar age children. So for me, I think I felt more out of step before we had kids in that I had a whole contingent of friends who, had small children and then elementary age children, and I sort of felt like a little bit left out of that and not understanding it. So it's yet I have them now to turn to see what happens later. And then I also mm-hmm. have my friends who are parenting similar age children as I. And I think, anybody that's in a situation that goes through an adoption or goes through fertility treatments has to be a resourceful kind of person, or you'd sort of give up. And I'm sorry?
No, we were agreeing with
you. Yeah, and so I think that I think perhaps that growing that resourcefulness over time and through these issues makes it a little bit easier, first of all, to feel out of step, because I guess, you're doing this in a non-traditional way anyway, so you just grow to be comfortable with that. But also, because you've learned to be resourceful, you learn to find friends, and you learn to make connections where you need to make them.
Julia, you said that you don't have many in your peer group who have young children. Does that make you and your partner feel like you are having to, are you actively seeking, we've got to find new friends, we got to find people to do stuff with that we can do with our child? Or are your friends, have they kind of rallied around and invite you to what you can do and exclude you for those that you, the activities that you cannot?
Oh, they really do try to include us as much as possible. And sometimes we have to educate them a little bit. Dinner at 8 o'clock is probably going to be intolerable with a toddler in tow. Breakfast is fine. We'll be great at breakfast. But we are having to build new connections and new friendships, and we expect that to get easier as he becomes more social. He's right on the cusp of having activities like soccer and other things that he'll be involved in with other kids. When they're little babies, there's just not that opportunity to bond with other parents because your kids aren't doing social things.
No, you don't have it. Right. Even the mommy and me type of things will get you out and around other moms of infants. But he's a little on on the young side. Kathy, have you found that do you feel different from the parents of your children's friends? Do you feel like you have much in common with them, given that you're likely, I don't know, 10 years older than many of them, maybe even more, I suppose?
You know, it's not the age gap that interests me. It's the background of my children. I have to be conscious a lot of the time for when an adoption issue will come up. You know, that whole thing of sharing baby pictures. I have two kids I don't have baby pictures of, mm-hmm. that I will never get baby pictures for. I have, you know, one child who will sit in class and they'll say, well, where are you born? And we'll be going around the state here, and he'll put up his hand and say, I was born in Kazakhstan.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's there's just differences there. And you have to be really sensitive to when those are not important and when they are.
Mm-hmm. And that makes you feel out of step with the parents of your children's friends.
Sometimes. I mean, it can. Particularly my younger son came, I adopted him when he was 20 months old, and he came from an environment with neglect and trauma. And so I'll be doing things with him to deal with that, you know, other parents simply never encounter, and you really can't share a conversation about it because it doesn't have any, they don't have any background in
mm-hmm.
it. So you do have to, and in situations like that, you do also have to find other resources for people who do have a background in that so that you can have that conversation, but it's not the fault of anybody. It's
mm-hmm.
not really a problem. It's just
it is the reality.
It's just the reality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You are listening to Creating a Family. Today we're talking about becoming a first-time mom over the age of 40. Creating a Family has the largest adoption and infertility communities on the social networks, and we would love to have you join us. There are three ways to connect with us on Facebook. There is our Facebook page, of course, which you can find facebook.com/creatingafamily. We also have a very large and active Facebook support group. It is a closed group, so you have to request to join, and we have to approve you, which we will. The easiest way to find that support group is to type in the words Creating a Family in the Facebook search box. The page and the group will pop up. You can like the page and join the group, or you can connect with me individually on Facebook, and that's Dawn.Davenport. Dawn.Davenport1 on Facebook. We also have an account on Pinterest and Google+ and Twitter, and we are Creating a Family at all of those, so you can find us that way. You know, I'd like to talk a little about the financial aspects of becoming an older parent, and it seems to me that it can cut both ways. One, you're probably more financially secure than you were in your 20s and early 30s, but you also have fewer years to save and prepare for the future. So I can't help but think that it's a double-edged sword in that way. Julia, how have you analyzed it? I know you well enough to know that you do analyze, so
you do
think things through. So how did you factor that in when you made the decision the first time, and how are you factoring in it now when you're thinking of doing it again?
The first time it was such an emotional experience, and we were looking at the cost of conception, and we were lucky that our fertility clinic worked with a company that provides financing at about the same rate that you would finance a new car. So and the cost was about the same. So we decided, you know, one less car in our lives. Okay. So that emotional part of it, we got past, and I don't think we were, I think we had blinders on and didn't think about, oh, wow, we're taking on the cost of raising a child when most people are, you know, funding their retirement funds, because we wanted this so badly. I think we were kind of blinded, and I think a lot of parents are. The second child, that's a whole different matter because we're looking at, you know, are we sacrificing things for our first child in order to have a second child? And is that fair to him? In addition to, is that fair to us for our retirement plans?
Yeah, I think that's real. And you know, the reality of paying for college at the time when you're on Social Security, and it's just how you think in terms of what you need to save in order to be financially secure, as well as to meet your obligations. Lisa, what thoughts have you had in, you also are contemplating another, mm-hmm. adding another child. How have you analyzed the finances, both the first time when you were 44 and now when mm-hmm. you would be 46 or 47 by the time you, well, probably even a little older if you adopt from
Queens. Yeah, probably almost 50, yeah. So it's, we used to joke that we have already spent our first child's college education trying to get our first child. And I think that's actually a really accurate assessment for us anyway, because we went through fertility treatments that, and not all states cover fertility treatments, and much of ours was not. We both got second jobs, and we both borrowed from family to make all of this kind of thing happen. And I think that Julia's right. It's a very emotional decision. And we decided, you know, this was more important to us than the retirement fund at this point. But we are, now that we have a child, we are in a slightly, as Julia said, a very different, not slightly, very different position. And we are trying to determine whether or not that's a viable option for us. I think the emotions were so overwhelming the first time, and we hadn't spent the entire college education as yet. But now we have, and so we have to make sure that we can provide for the child that we already have, in addition to hopefully ourselves, so he doesn't have to support us in our old age, and then you know, have enough to provide equivalently for any future children. So it's something that I think it's not a strictly financial decision, which complicates matters. And I think everybody has their own way of thinking about it and their own priorities. And there's lots of different ways to go about it. Adoption and fertility treatments cost very differently depending on kind of what the parameters are. And so everybody has to make the best choice for themselves. But it certainly has been something that's been a difficult thing to contemplate. And I remember, particularly during the fertility treatments after the third time, going through IVF, thinking how painful it was that money was going to be the thing that was going to prevent us ultimately from potentially having a family. That piece mm-hmm. was very, very, very painful. But it's a reality, both for fertility treatments and for adoption for many people.
Well, and I think that the distinction, too, when you're contemplating it in your 40s, mid to late 40s, is you're having to think, okay, I only have X number of years left with which to save for our retirement. And as you point out, oftentimes you've spent your retirement money on infertility treatment or mm-hmm. on the adoption. And so you're thinking, well, you know, when you're in your late 20s, number one, you think you have forever, but even and even though you don't have forever, you do have a long time. So,
yeah.
And Kathy, what about you? You contemplated this and did it as a single mom. And so how did you analyze the how much do I need to have saved to take care of myself versus how much am I going to need to spend in raising my kids?
At least with the first one, I don't think I spent as much time as I did on the second two.
Well, you were 4 years
again,
older, too. Yeah.
Well, yeah, but more that whole emotion thing in the first one goes in very much. Very emotional experience, your first adoption. And just you know, figuring out how to get to Kazakhstan was a challenge. So
figuring out where Kazakhstan was on the map might have been
right. And, you know, how much it was going to cost just to get there was, and we were there for 53 days, so just the cost of all of that was an interesting experience. When I got home, of course, I totaled it all up, and I knew exactly what I had spent. And so when I went into the next one, I knew a lot more about what I was doing. I also, of course, have been very lucky. My mother's been in on this with me. So we have done a lot of things to reduce expenses, like live together and go down to one car for a long time. We only just recently went back up to two. I changed jobs to work from home so that we could further limit any type of sitter expenses we had. We just don't use them most of the time. We changed our vacation plans to dramatically reduce the amount of money we spent on those. I mean, there was a lot that went into feeling comfortable that I would still be saving for retirement while still doing the whole family thing. And it's an ongoing process. We reevaluate it every few months. Are we doing the right thing?
Mm-hmm. And what do I need, and what do I need to live on, and that type of stuff. Yeah. Okay.
Yep.
I'd like to take a moment to thank a few more of our gold sponsors. It is through their generous support that we can bring you this show, as well as all the other resources, our website, our videos, our support group, and things such as that. We have Children's Connection. They are an adoption agency with offices throughout Texas, providing domestic infant adoption, embryo donation adoption, home studies, and post-adoption support to families throughout the United States. We have Spence Chapin. They are a full-service adoption agency bringing over 100 years of experience to a new direction. They are creating permanent loving homes for children most in need, older kids, siblings, children with special needs. Spence Chapin has eliminated the financial barrier by providing no-fee adoption services for families who can consider opening up their lives and their hearts to this very special population. You know, as much as, and I'm right there with you guys, so I'm going to say I want to believe very much that age is just a number. But I know that it isn't. I know that I only have, you know, I've only been allocated so many years on this earth, and I, as much as I don't want to think about it or contemplate it, it is the reality. But I think when you take on a young child when you are in your 40s or 50s, you have to start assessing age in a different manner. How did you work out in your mind and in your life the question of, is it fair to your child to have him or her or to adopt him or her at an older age? Molly, how did you work that question, which I think is a universal question that all parents who are all older parents have to consider?
You're exactly right. I've had a lot of moments of guilt wondering if maybe my age would hamper my daughter's life, quality of life, the fun that she's able to have or the exposure she's able to have. And you know, especially in my circumstances, because she was born to another local set of parents who are unable to care for her, there is still a little bit of guilt in my situation, wondering if maybe had they been able to erase some of their bad behavior or manage things a little bit better, if they might be more active than I am. Looking through that, I think there's a lot that I can give her because of my age. I'm a much calmer parent, and especially in her hyperactive mode, that's what she needs. She needs someone to calm her down. I think I've been able to travel, been lucky enough to travel a lot in my life, and so I'm planning on giving her that as soon as she's able to appreciate a little bit more things. I'm very excited about being able to open up the world to her. My parents were a little bit older when they adopted me. They were they were 35, which back in that time period was old for parenting.
Yeah, isn't that funny? Yeah. Funny, yes.
Yeah, and I do remember, you know, once or twice it coming up that maybe my dad no longer wanted to ride the roller coaster with me. But for the most part, I think older parents tend to have a better grasp on their world. Their little things don't faze us like we used to, because our car has already broken down before. we know how to handle it. We just make a phone call, or we prepare for life's events a little bit better. Or we have some checks and balances in place already that I think younger parents may not. So, and I, for one, know when I need a little more help, and I know had I been a younger parent, I might not have been able to reach out and ask for it like I am now. I'm willing to throw in the towel a little bit faster than I used to, or at least ask for some support, but particularly with a child of my daughter's behavior levels, sometimes that's necessary to reach out for other ideas.
And for the rest of you on the panel, I want you to be thinking of some advantages that you have found as well. But before we, because I do want to, that was actually a question that I was going to ask, and we'll kind of list them off. But before we do that, Lisa, I want to hear from each of you, actually, how you balanced in your mind the fairness issue, because I hear that a lot. That the energy and fairness are the two things that we hear when we get questions, they seem to kind of revolve around those two issues the most. So Lisa, how did you assess whether is this fair to our son? You know, with us being in our 40s when we start with him.
I think the first time I had a very different sort of viewpoint than I do now. I'm more concerned about that for any future children that we might have. Because we would be significantly older than the child.
Yeah, you'll be 50, if given the nature of,
right,
you're 46 now, given the nature of,
right,
and your child will probably be about 2. So
probably older than that. They're coming home 2.5, 3. It
okay.
might be even 4
yeah.
by that point. But yes, it would still be a child that started out running like this one did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We went from 0 to running. But yeah,
yes,
that's a certain amount of energy, and you have to think kind of in the future, am I going to be able to sustain that? And I really honestly we were not all that concerned about it the first time. I really felt very strongly that what we could provide a child would far outweigh kind of the concerns about being sort of too slow or too uninvolved. I think by the time
when are you going to die? Are you? I mean, I'm actually trying to get at not when you're going to die. I'm not asking that question.
Sure,
because,
sure.
You know, but,
well, if I could tell you that, I'd, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Wouldn't you like to? You know, no, I wouldn't like to.
Right.
But nonetheless, I mean, it's more the, will I be around till my child is 18? Will I be around
right.
when my child's 21? You know,
right.
You know, that's more the issue. Not so much the energy,
mm-hmm.
but the, am I going to be there to see my child graduate from college and that type
right.
of question?
And I think everybody has to go based on kind of their own family history and their own health level. And we felt relatively confident that we'd be there through at least that, but certainly it's something that crossed our minds. And we have made sure to have people in place in the event that we're not. And it was something that we thought about perhaps much earlier on than parents who are younger or parents who just have sort of normal traditional pregnancies do. I think we spent a fair bit of time discussing it and thinking about what that would mean for him, how it will feel to be in class with his little friends and then have the oldest parents in the room. You know, that can make you feel like you're standing out a little bit in a case where, you know, with adopted children, and particularly in our case, transracial adoption, where you're already sticking out a little bit, being a little bit different. So, yeah, certainly we've thought about it, and ultimately we decided to move forward. But I think for us, with the potential for an increased age with a second adoption, it's something that we're considering much more to be a much larger piece of the potential puzzle.
Yeah, and I can see that because
on our side,
before. Go ahead.
It kind of mitigates in favor of having the second child, because if we die at, you know, a normal age, then our child will have somebody else in his life.
Right.
He won't be all alone.
Mm-hmm.
That's an interesting point, and that's something I hear a lot. That was Julia speaking. You are exactly right. The thought of, I want my child to have a family, and I won't be that family. You know, realistically, when my child is 40, you know, I may not be here, so therefore I want to have my child have a family. That's an interesting way to look at it.
Mm-hmm.
Kathy, what about you?
Well, I'm sitting here listening, and I'm kind of somewhere in between, I think. first of all, I don't think I really, I worry sometimes about whether I'm going to be there when they're 21 or 25, but my family tends to be fairly long lived. My mother's doing fine at 77 right now. So I don't try and spend a lot of time on that. It's kind of out of my control anyway, so that can just drive up the nervous level, I think. But I also know that being a parent now, I have more time to spend being a parent. I have a job that's very stable, that has very consistent working hours, that has flex time. I can be mom whenever I need to be mom. And I don't think in my 20s and 30s I would have been able to do that. Would have been a lot more juggling. I was working outside the home then. There was just different stuff going on. I feel like, and maybe it's just an ego thing, I feel like I'm a better parent now than I would have been then. I will also say that the question of whether your kids are better off with you than where they were before, and for at least two of my kids, they clearly are better off here than they were before. My daughter was adopted at birth and came from a teenage family, teenage parents who are not together anymore. They might have been okay. We don't know a lot, I mean, other than that they were about 16. But my younger son was neglected and my older son was in an orphanage. Whatever limitations I have as a parent, I'm better than what that was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and, I hear what
and
you're
I
saying,
do
yeah.
think I do think you have to say, whatever age you are you still doing something that is in the best interest of the child? And clearly, yes, in those cases.
You know, I wonder if how all of you factored in the age you're going to be when your child is a teen or in college.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one thing to parent an infant, but another thing completely to be the parent of a teen. And I speak as someone who truly likes adolescents, and I've worked with years with teens in various capacities, and I'm now parenting teens. So I speak as someone who actually finds that age wonderful, for the most part. There are moments. But for the most part, I truly like it. But I also acknowledge that it brings on, it requires a different type of parenting for sure. So I'm wanting to explore that, how you thought about that, or if you thought about that when you were making the decision. Let's start with you, Julia. Because you're going to be close to, let's say, 70. You'll be in your late. Well,
yeah.
With the second one, you'll be in your 70 when they're teens, but you know, with your
yeah.
in the late 60s, okay? When you have
part of it is a math thing, you know, because I gave birth at an age that it's easy to add things to, 50. So now, anytime I hear, it was handy, yeah. Anytime I hear anybody mention anything about their age, I think, wow, Luke will be 22. Like when you mentioned your mom being 72 and having great energy, I thought, wow, Luke will be 22 when I'm 72. So I automatically think that about everything.
It's so real.
And it's so real. It's very real. And kind of like you were saying that you know your kids are in a better situation than they would have been had you not adopted them. You know, my kid wouldn't exist had I not brought him into the world. So I've got to think that the life he has is better than not having any life at all. So I kind of come back to that as well. The hard issue for me now is that we have two frozen embryos still, and do I bring those children into our family and knowing that I'll be in my 70s when they graduate from high school, or do I allow them to be adopted by another family who would bring them up, presumably a younger couple? And how do I make that work?
That's
the fairness thing that I'm struggling with right there.
Yeah,
what's fair
really,
to them?
Yeah, that's a really interesting dilemma, and I can see. Yeah. Lisa, how about you? You are contemplating it again.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think in terms of, or how do you think when you think in terms of the issue of how old you'll be when they are
sure
teenagers
and
beyond.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And let me tell you, early adulthood, too, because my experience has been my, because I have teens as well as young, early adult children, and early adulthood, children in early adulthood. Anyway, although they may or may not acknowledge it, they need me quite a bit, too.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Well, it's certainly something that we thought about actually from the jump, and we actually chose our adoption agency because they spoke about adoption kind of being a lifelong issue, and because they talked about our potential children as teenagers and young adults and the issues they might face there. I think a lot of people, particularly people who are first thinking about adoption, tend to think about newborns and how adorable they'll be and maybe mm-hmm. even toddlers. But it's you really have to start to think because they're going to be people at some point with lives of their own and thoughts of their own. So it's something that we contemplated kind of from the jump, thinking about how we were going to kind of manage that. And I suspect we'll manage it in much the same way that most people do, which is by the seat of our pants and figure it out as we go along. Mm-hmm. Having said that, we do have other friends who've been through it before. The one issue that I think for me I find the most daunting is the issue of the rapidly changing technology and the way in which people communicate mm-hmm. and the recognition that it's changed so rapidly from the time, for example, since I was 25. And I imagine it will, you know, change again that much by the time my kid gets to be, you know, middle teenager. And I worry that I'm going to be so far out of the loop that they're going to be that I won't know what I don't know. And that there's going to be a pretty big disconnect at that point in how he experiences the world in that way and the way that I choose to experience the world. There are going to be things that I really don't get. And so as a result, I've tried to stay relatively on top of all of that stuff. You know, I have friends who are in early in graduate school or in college, and I do try and stay in touch with that kind of the things that they're interested in, how they communicate. That piece of it does worry me a bit, I have to say. The rest of it, I think, you know, we'll figure out like people have done for millennia. But this is all so new all the time that it really is going to take some work to keep up with it and to make sure that I'm connected and understanding what's going on in his world. Does that make sense?
You know, it does make sense, but I would say that that's a doable thing. You know, I think that it.
I hope so.
I think it absolutely is, and the interesting thing is that we always hear the kind of the cliche that children will keep you young, but I actually believe that they do. I think that it's not that I'm trying to be naive to the realities of age. Age is age, okay? I get that, but I also think. I wasn't particularly an older mom, but I also wasn't my kids were spread out over 10 years. And so by the time the last one came along, I certainly wasn't a young mom. And honestly, I think that, Julia, you will be a younger 72-year-old. You will be because mm-hmm. you will be with a foot very firmly in the world of, in that case, college. And the technology thing, I think that having children that age will absolutely keep you, because if nothing else, you need to know what you have a vested interest in keeping up with it. Plus, you're going to be paying for it, you know. So,
yeah.
You know, you will know more than most of your peer group, which will actually make you feel very cool, I think.
Yeah. I'm planning on it. I do think it takes a special kind of person. I think if one of your strengths is openness already and that you're comfortable doing different sorts of things and learning new things, I think this is a lot easier. If you're one of those kind of people that likes to stay within their comfort zone and not be challenged to learn new things, then being an older parent is going to be really hard.
Mm-hmm. Well, but don't you think to a certain extent that people who are considering adoption or fertility treatment in their mid to late 40s are already open to new things? I mean, really? You know,
I think it's kind of self-selecting.
I think there's a self-selecting thing as well going on there. You are listening to Creating a Family. Talk about adoption and infertility. We're so glad to have you with us on this Creating a Family show when we're talking about becoming a first-time mom over the age of 40. We primarily keep in touch with our audience through our twice-weekly e-newsletters. We let you know about the latest developments in the world of infertility and adoption, as well as the upcoming week's blog and show topic. And we add 4 pieces of content, new content, to our site every week, and we'll keep you up to date on what we've added, because some of it may be really helpful for you. We'd love to have you sign up for our weekly newsletter. You can do that on any of the pages of our website, creatingafamily.org. You know, it occurs to me that I have neglected to ask each of you. Kathy, I know you're the person who is your partner is, I think you said 77, your mom, so she is not younger. But it occurs to me that I did never ask the rest of you what your husband or partners, what age they are. Lisa, how old is your husband?
My husband is only 3 months younger than I, so we are
okay.
We're in the same space. Yep.
Yeah, Molly, how about you?
My husband is 5 years younger than I, but has a lot less energy. I just want to put that out there.
Well, that matters, actually. But yeah. I think it also probably in some level you think in terms of, okay, you know, how old will I be when? Well, you know, he will be 5 years younger. Julia, how old is your partner?
Yes.
She's 2 years younger, and she's already raised 2 kids. We have a 22-year-old daughter and a 19-year-old son. And that's a wonderful thing, because when I freak out, she can go, you know, they do this. She's the voice of experience.
Yeah, actually, that is a nice a nice combination, and to have somebody who can say, all right, you know, really, honestly, I swear at some point he will be potty trained.
That's right.
Yeah. Let's take a moment to talk about some of the advantages. We've talked about some of the things, not necessarily disadvantages, but things you do have to kind of think through, issues that may or may not come up. But let's talk about some of the advantages. Some that have been thrown out have been calmer, having had more life experiences, and perhaps the money to indulge in some of these experiences with your child, so you can be able to provide your child with more experiences. Let's see, maybe a little calmer. Well, we talked about that, yeah. More able to ask for help, stable jobs, more time. Lisa, can you think of any additional things that you think are an advantage to being your age with a 4-year-old, 46 with a 4-year-old?
Sure. I think for me, and it's partly to do with age, but also partly to do with the process that we went to get to our child, is the extraordinary level of gratitude that I have about being a parent in the first place. So the fact that I am truly actively aware and grateful for being a parent every day, there's so much stuff that doesn't faze me, doesn't bother me, that doesn't really stress me out, and the fact that I can be here in the first place, that I can be someone's parent in the first place, is amazing. And as a result, I think both my husband and I are really extremely present with our child, and really noticing all of the cool stuff that happens, and really grateful for it. So I think that just being an older parent and having to go through fertility treatments or adoption puts you in a different kind of mind space about parenting. And I find that when other people, my kid's like everybody else's, you know, my 4-year-old's like everybody else's 4-year-old. Sometimes he's a pain in the butt. But there is something that I can find to be amazed by or delighted by or grateful for every single day. And the fact that I take time to do that, or that I'm able to have that kind of perspective, I think does have something to do with age. And for me, that's kind of the biggest thing that permeates everything that I do with him, is that level of gratitude and that level of awareness, I think, about how wonderful it is to be able to love and care for somebody in the way that you do a child.
That's beautifully said. Julia, how about you? Advantages to being a 52-year-old, I guess, with an 18-month-old?
I think in our late 40s, early 50s, we are in a substantially different developmental phase of life. And I think that this developmental phase really does lend itself much better to parenting than the developmental phase that we're in when our 20s. I mean, think about it. What was important to you when you were 20? For most folks, it's about finding out where you fit and what you're going to do with your life. You know, am I a Democrat? Am I a Republican? Am I going to be a, you know, person that works in an office or works out in the field? You know, who are going to be my friends? How do I fit? By this point, we know that, you know, for better or for worse, I'm probably not going to write the great American novel, and I'm probably not going to be a ballerina. And I'm okay with that. Those kind of hopes and dreams and things and wondering, we've pretty well resolved by the time we're in our mid-40s. And then we're looking at different things. And I think that those things really lend themselves to parenting better. We're less self-focused at this stage of life.
Yeah. Also, you know, very well said. Kathy, I think you've listed some of the positives. If you have any others, let me know. Molly, I'll come back to you, Kathy. Molly, how about you? Any others in addition to the ones that we've mentioned of what you perceive as advantages to being 45, or now I guess you're getting close to 50 with a almost kindergartner, or probably is a kindergartner.
I am. Yeah. She is a kindergartner, and I will be turning 50 in the middle of her kindergarten career. I've mentioned quite a few already that I think we do have the ability to manage ourselves a little better. We maybe don't have the same stressors that a 20-year-old person does, and we also understand how to control them a little bit better, maybe our delivery. But to someone else's point, my gratitude for having my daughter in my life is immense. Being able to have hear her say mommy makes me willing to do everything possible for her and put some of my goals that I'd had prior in the back seat. The mm-hmm. other thing I wanted to mention is that my parents passed away when I was very young, in that late teens, early 20s years. And as devastating as that was and will always be, I think it's given me the foresight to know intrinsically what I need to prepare her for and what I need to prepare her, how I need to prepare her. She's naturally an independent girl, so I think that is terrific because I see her needing to have that independence at some point in her life. But for me, it makes me a better parent because I know that I may not be around to see her great-grandchildren or her, mm-hmm. her children, potentially. So I soak up every moment with her, and I just thoroughly enjoy her company.
Kathy, anything to add to before we move on to the next topic?
I'll say only that I share the sense of gratitude. Every time one of my kids smiles at me, it just brightens the room. It's an amazing sensation to know them, to love them.
You know, one question I feel like I must ask is because we get this question a lot, and not necessarily in relation to whether you should be an older parent, but how hard is it to – we get the question more often with adoption, but I think it's a relevant question to ask with both adoption and fertility treatment. Did the three of you, Kathy, Molly, and Lisa, adopted? Was it hard? Kathy, you were 45 and did an infant adoption and a two-year-old adoption. I presume one was from foster care and one was a domestic infant adoption. Was it, less in specific to the domestic infant adoption, was it harder as a 45-year-old woman to adopt than did you have to wait longer?
Well, this is going to sound amazing, but it was 6 weeks from the time I was paperwork ready till she was home.
Yep.
But
wow.
I do think, yeah, I know. Pretty astonishing. And I still can't believe it now. But at the same time, I took steps to make sure that I made it easier. Being single and being a little bit older, not that age really shows in your profile much, and you aren't required to mention it. So it's not like I was out there advertising that. But still, you know, it's one of those things. I went with a referral service and really kind of widened the field. And I had told my supervisor that if I got a call to fly today, I was flying today, and he needed to know that. And I was matched on Thursday. She was born on Friday, and I picked her up on Tuesday. So
yeah,
be ready to fly.
Yeah, well, and your flexibility, and you cast a wide net. Molly, what about you from foster care? Lisa, it really wasn't an issue. It's not an issue because in international adoption, there's a set age, and as long as you're below that age, it just doesn't work against you one way or the other. Molly, did you find it in any way working against you with foster care adoption?
Not at all. Our area doesn't appear to have that the same age limitations for foster care. In fact, we continue to get calls, and we take children on a part-time basis all the time. I will tell you that when we were looking into international adoption, we did see a lot of barriers. There were a lot of them that I was simply aging out of very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So that was one of the reasons why we considered foster care as well as, for a while, we sort of spread our net far and wide and looked across all the agencies. But even when we started looking, when we realized fertility treatments were not going to be working or working for us, we were already aged out of several international adoption programs and domestic adoption programs.
The difference, though, is at least in international, you know up front, they have a cutoff. It is this age. If you're below this age, you are accepted. If you are above this age, they may, or you know, there's some that they'll tell you they'll make an exception, but generally you're not. So it's a known deal, but you're right. You may know it, but you may be aged out of it. Julia, did you find most, I will say that most clinics have no problem working with women 45 and under, and most that I know of, you know, that right around the 45 age don't have a problem. But there are definitely clinics that have issues or have rules or at least considerations for women, you know, over a certain age, and certainly women in their 50s. Did you find that to be an issue at all, or have you heard of other situations, other clinics where that has been an issue?
I went through a very frightening thing when our son was born. We immediately started thinking about, do we want another, because our clinic was saying we will not transfer into a uterus that's older than 50. Wait, I gave birth at 50. Wait a minute. Yeah. Or if the intended parent's combined age is more than 100. And that was just my clinic's own particular stance. So we were asking for exceptions and blah, 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 trying to get around that. And about that time, the American Society for Reproductive Medicine came out with a new standard that said that it's perfectly fine to transfer an embryo into a uterus that's 55 or less. So, we got a break. But still, you know, I'm creeping up on that, too. I'll be 52 next month. So the pressure is there that women who do IVF in their 30s don't have. You know, their pressure is, okay, I've got to pay $500 a year to keep my embryos stored, but I got plenty of time to do something with them. If you do IVF later in your reproductive life, you don't have that luxury to wait. My sister, I was 6 years old when we adopted my sister, and I think that was maybe a little too much age between me and her. But I certainly wish I could wait until Luke was a little bit older before we considered having another. But that's just not an option.
Right, yeah, both for your age as well as you point out, you're nearing the upper cutoff. And I will point out that not every clinic, even though ASRM has made that statement, there are still clinics who have other rules, similar to the one,
that's true,
Julia, that you mentioned. Let me remind you about two more of our gold sponsors. It is through their support that we can bring you this show and all the resources here at Creating a Family. We have, Bethany Christian Services. They are a global nonprofit organization dedicated to empowering children and families They are committed to quality social services along the child welfare continuum. Those services range from pregnancy counseling, family preservation, to foster care, and to adoption. We also have Nightlight Christian Adoptions. They are pioneers in offering embryo donation and adoption services to clients throughout the world through their Snowflakes Embryo Adoption Program. Ladies, I thank you so much for being on this show today. If our audience, anyone out there, has enjoyed our show, this one or others, please, if you would like to help us grow, we would certainly appreciate if you would rate this podcast on iTunes. If you have iTunes on your computer or your phone, you just type in the words Creating a Family and we pop right up. Otherwise, you can go to creatingafamily.org/radio show, click on the iTunes button, and it will take you to the rating. It's a star rating. Oh, and we would also love it if you would give us a comment. We'll take either or. We really appreciate comments. However, again, thank you, Molly Cashman, Julia Tate, Lisa Notes Colburn, and Kathy White for being our guest today on Creating a Family. I will be blogging on this topic tomorrow, so I would love to have anybody who is interested to come around, and we will continue the discussion in the comment section, so please do. And thanks for joining us today, and I will see you next week.
And now, an ad from Dad.
All right, save money on car insurance when you bundle home and auto with Progressive.
Can I take these off?
All right.
What is this? This looks good.
Wow. That's well made. Where did you get this? I'm talking to you with the hair. Yeah, where did you get this? It's good stuff. That's solid. That's not veneer. That's solid stuff.
Progressive can't save you from becoming your parents, but we can save you money when you bundle home and auto. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company, affiliates, and other insurers. Discounts not available in all states or situations.
Your hands were made for greatness. Mighty hands for painting, paneling, and clicking the submit order button on HomeDepot.com to get that duvet. And these Egyptian cotton towels delivered right to your door. Do more with decor at the Home Depot. Save up to 30% on select bedding and bath. Now at HomeDepot.com. More saving, more kinds of doing. Valid on select items online only. Free delivery on select items $45 or more. Enter promo code BEDBATH15 at purchase for an extra 15% off. Visit HomeDepot.com for more information.